I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 77 of Season 6 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Bubble Eat from Fight Club Minute. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
It's always good to be back.
Yes, that's true. That is definitely true. So, Minute 77 begins with Joseph continuing to talk about Harry and ends with George showing Ernie a newspaper. So yesterday we talked mostly about a montage. Actually, we only talked about a montage. And there were a lot of things going on in that montage. anybody who wants more information on things that we didn't talk about, I have lots of notes. I'll save them for a future episode somewhere, maybe in a future movie where they will talk about those things. Who knows? But the montage ended yesterday with Joseph telling Clarence about what happened to Harry. You know, what about Harry? And he starts off by saying, Harry barely topped them all. And then this minute begins with him continuing and saying, a Navy flyer. He shot down 15 planes. Two of them as they were about to crash into a transport full of soldiers. Do you think that this would classify him as an ace? What the classification is of a flying ace?
I didn't realize that there was like a certain statistical thing that you needed to achieve in order to be like granted the title of flying ace.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's interesting is there are many discrepancies as to what, how many you need to shoot down in aerial combat, but the official number is that you only have to shoot on five. I'm not saying that that's an easy feat, but you know the fact that it's only five shows that it's something that's not simple at all. You know, they started the idea in 1915 during World War I. That's when the whole idea of dogfighting basically started, and they actually, it was used as a propaganda term in order to provide people on the home front with a type of hero. You know, that you can look forward to. You know, in this war that just was continuing to go on and wasn't stopping. Then you have the most famous ace who, Snoopy doesn't like, right? The Red Baron. Okay. He, how many kills do you think he officially has?
Let's see. Well, if Harry had 15. I would imagine that it was more than 15. I would say maybe 50.
According to the sources that I found, he has more than 80 kills.
Not bad.
I mean, again, back in World War I, the pilots, I guess, weren't as skilled as they are right now. You know, it was something that was very. But the pilot with the most Allied hits, you know, as opposed to someone, you know, on the side of Germany, was a French colonel named René Fonck, who has 75 kills to his status, which also was World War One.
Not too far off.
Yeah, that's right. And then during World War II, things changed. You have another German pilot named Erich Hartmann, who has apparently 352 official kills.
Wow.
And he is known as the highest scoring fighter pilot of all time who doesn't do it at a video game, you know. Because I'm assuming that there are people who play video games that might have slightly higher numbers, but I mean, that's just a crazy number.
Yeah.
Harry's on his way. He's got his 15. And I mean, we started talking about a little bit about this yesterday. So the shot shows us Harry, you know, smiling at the camera. You have this chalkboard behind him that you can see it says the word forecast. And it says increasing cloudiness and is expected in the, and something is expected in the afternoon. Maybe sunshine. I don't know. It's hard to tell what that is. They have all the wind calculations and stuff like that, which is actually very cool that they, you know, that they took the time for this type of detail.
Yeah, my first guess, especially with what's coming later in the minutes, is that it's the cloudiness and snow. But then I looked up and I believe that it says that the temperature is 83 with a dew point of 73. So that's a little warm for snow.
Well, it depends on where you are, but yeah, probably. Yeah, they didn't complain about, you know, or climate change back in the 1940s. So, yeah. But I mean, we talked about a little bit of that yesterday, that it looks like Harry is superimposed over these other pilots that are walking behind him, you know, the same way that we were talking about with Sam yesterday.
Yeah, although I feel like this one looks better than the other one, I especially with him.
It looks better. But then at the very end, at the last fraction of a second, you know, as we see him, you know, turn into a group of people, it looks like he's actually there with them. You know, it looks real. So, you know, because he joins them. So either they did a really, really good job, you know, with the special effects here to make it seem as if Harry is joining them, or he really was.
Yeah, I could see it going either way. Like, but, I didn't initially think
exactly
that it was a rear projection. Like, I thought that it was a set.
Right, again, it could be either. There's no way of us knowing for sure which of this is. And, you know, as Joseph is telling everyone about Harry's escapades, so we see shots of you know, this is probably stuff that Capra shot, you know, during World War II himself. You know, you have shots of you know, planes shooting bombs into the sea, and you see all the tracer bullets shooting, you know, between ships. We see a plane that's been hit that crashes into the water with a whole bunch of crew members on the ship becoming very happy. You know, that they're trying to show us is what Harry did in order to save the people on that transport. You know, you know, they took that real footage from there.
Now, of course, that's an important line for a feature for later in the movie.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I mean, everything in this movie has lots of I wouldn't even call them callbacks; they're called forwards.
For sure. You know,
that later on they will be callbacks to other things. Exactly. Foreshadowing. Okay, you can call it foreshadowing too. And then Clarence asks the question, "Yes, but George," and Joseph goes, "George, 4F on account of his ear. George fought the battles of Bedford Falls." So we see George standing in, I don't even know where he is, but in the back you see it says gasoline and something, price of admission.
Office of Price Administration.
Office of Price Administration. There you go. Right. Sorry. Which, again, I don't really know what that means. Maybe it's the idea that you know, George was in charge of regulating prices on things or whatever.
Oh, that's
in Bedford Falls.
I think behind his head it says ration board number two. So I think that's he's like the in charge of the rationing system that they were doing.
Okay,
like that's, giving that's people fair. Their ration coupons, I believe.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And then, you know, the montage continues, and we hear George then say, "Now hold on now, don't you know there's a war on?" which is great that they put that in there, because, you know, we've seen in this movie the way that George is trying to help people as much as possible, and this seems very similar to what happened when there was the bank run a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to calm people down, and therefore, and that was, then he was talking about his money. Here he's working, I guess, for the government or for the town or whatever, you know, of Bedford Falls. So, you know, he goes, "Don't you know there's a war on?" And then Joseph, we hear Joseph's voice again, and he goes, "Air raid warden." So, it's pretty funny that in Bedford Falls they had an air raid warden. Yeah. Do you know what the job of an air raid warden is?
I did actually look this up because I was kind of curious, and it's someone that prepares the town for the potential of an air raid. So whenever it's night, and you see him in this scene, he's whistling at the guy to lower his blackout curtain, so that way, because any they imagine that any sort of light coming from windows helps give the airplanes a target from the air. And so they want to basically have all the lights off so that at night it's as dark as possible, so to hide any potential targets.
Right. I mean, I just find it very ironic because the idea is that, okay, you know, nobody's really going to be bombing Bedford Falls. To me, that doesn't sound like something that's going to happen. It could potentially, but
I believe it was probably the Wikipedia article that I looked up, or, you know, just whatever was the first hit on the search engine, said that some people took their jobs so seriously that if they saw a light that was left on and nobody was home, they would actually go so far as to shoot the light out.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That could be problematic. slightly. So basically, an air raid warden is someone who ensures the blackout was observed and sounded the air raid sirens, safely guiding people into public air raid shelters, issued and checked gas masks, evacuated areas around unexploded bombs, rescued people where possible from bomb-damaged properties, located temporary accommodations for those who had been bombed out, and reported to their control center about incidents, fires. Also, they called in other services as required. So basically, you know, they're the ones who were in charge of, yeah, I guess even in America back then, you needed to have people who were in charge of these type of things.
Yeah, and I believe they're also the ones that are educating the people as well of what to do in case of an air raid. And this is also like the early form of what I think would eventually turn into like the duck and cover. That was a product of the air raid.
No, that was in the 60s.
But I mean, it's turned into like this was like they were connected, not necessarily, but that it came from this. But just that idea of preparedness.
A different type of preparedness. Well, actually, the truth is duck and cover is probably much more plausible than what they're dealing with here. You know, because there was essentially a threat in, you know, in the 60s or in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. Here, the threat of bombing America was probably minimal to none, even though, you know, I don't think there was, maybe I think I heard of one plane that accidentally got to America or something like that, you know, but it wasn't anything beyond that. So, but again, the idea goes that you have to be prepared for these things, you know, just in case. That's what it comes down to, I guess. So, okay. So George had a good job. He had an important job that he needed to take care of, you know, in Bedford Falls during the war.
Yeah, even though they kind of take the steam out of him a little bit because they have this moment where, I guess, after he's done whistling, he has to wipe a little bit of spit off his jacket.
I mean, I also like when he's talking in the Office of Price Administration, you know, he has a pipe in hand and a cigarette on his ear at the same time. Blows his whistle at the man whose window is open, and he has to pull his shade down. You know, and like you said, you see him like spit, and he spits on himself. So, and then they continue with the narration from Joseph, and then he continues by saying paper drives, scrap drives, rubber drives, you know, which again to us these days doesn't really mean that much, but people watching this movie in 1946 really could relate to all these things. These are things that they had to do. You know, it was the whole idea of recycling at the time. that paper and scrap and rubber was used and recycled in for the war effort and stuff like that. So I think it's great that they do it this way. Just and again, it's a quick montage that quickly goes through. I mean, we see people stacking up papers in a car, and people walking with all these pieces of rubber that I don't even know where they got them from. Are they taking them from the junkyard or from a landfill? Or actually, sorry, that was the scrap. The rubber drive is basically kids stealing tires off of cars and bringing them to the there's a sign that says official rubber collection something depot maybe. So yeah, I mean some of the shots are good, but again, this is more for people at the time who can definitely relate to it. And and at this point we're already at the end of the war, so we've really shot through the whole war, and then we have a shot inside of a church, and then we hear Joseph say, like everybody else on VE Day, he wept and prayed. And on VJ Day, he wept and prayed again. So just for anyone who's unfamiliar, VE Day was victory in Europe. That was when Germany surrendered in the I think it was in May in 1945. And then VJ Day was on August 19th, 1945, when the Japanese finally gave up after the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I think it's great that they just quickly run through all these things, because it's essential but not essential for the movie. It's important that we know that these things happened, but we don't really need to see it beyond the few seconds that they show every single one of these aspects. So I like the way
I
they did
think
this here.
I think these days it's probably wouldn't have needed to go into that much detail, but I think when this was made, it was important for them to cover all the bases and show what was happening in everybody's life during that period.
Correct. And then surprisingly, we could get Franklin's voice chiming in again. We haven't heard from Franklin since the beginning of the movie. And Franklin says, Joseph, now show him what happened today. And Joseph says, oh, yes, sir. And he says, this morning, day before Christmas, so we're talking December 24th, around 10 a.m. Bedford Falls times. So again, I like the way that they introduce it that way. About 10 a.m. Bedford Falls times. I mean, we talked about this, I think during the first week, so you've probably already heard it by now. The whole idea of, in what time zone do they deal with in heaven? Or do they deal with in this particular astral plane where Clarence, Joseph, and Franklin are? We don't really know. The August 19th that I mentioned before. It was actually not VJ Day, sorry, but that was afterwards, because we see them walking into a church, and there's a sign that says Sunday morning, August 19th, special prayers as requested by President Truman, 11 a.m. Everybody welcome. So the idea was is that Truman wanted people to go have special prayers for all the people that were killed and injured in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. As everyone knows, Truman made the decision and he stuck by his decision, but he still had a conscience about it, not being 100% sure if he made the right decision or not, except for the fact that he knew he was saving American lives. So yeah, I think it's interesting that we get to see that shot that they showed, that the footage of everyone going into the church with that sign. And then basically it fades into today. We see cars driving through the street, a lot of snow on the ground. And then we see Ernie standing, talking on a telephone, in the middle of the street. So, I guess this is where the taxi cab usually sits in order to wait and get his calls of where he needs to go pick people up and stuff like that. Did you see what Ernie's logo says?
Said night taxi.
It says Ernie's Night Day Taxi Service, meaning he's open 24 hours a day. If you need Ernie, he's there. Now, did you notice that the movie theater behind him, what movie is playing?
I didn't notice, but looking at it now, the bells of wait, the bells of Saint Mary.
That is correct. The Bells of St. Mary. So this scene obviously takes place on the 24th of December 1945, and the Bells of St. Mary is basically it's the sequel. Do you know what movie it's the sequel to?
No idea.
Going My Way, which the previous year won Best Picture with Bing Crosby. So the Bells of St. Mary is the sequel that came out, the following year. It was released on December 6, 1945. So it means that it's only been in the theater now for what is it? 3 weeks, since this is December 24th. So I guess you could say held over 3 weeks. I remember back in the 80s that they would always say that, like I remember Return of the Jedi. It was like held over. 42 weeks or something like that, because it was in the theater for so long. We see Ernie on this portable phone, and then George walks by and interrupts him and starts showing him the newspaper. And we see him with the pipe. We talked about before about whether we ever see him smoking. We just see him with a pipe. I don't remember. I don't know if we see smoke come out of the pipe, but he definitely has the pipe. And then we get to see the front of the page of the newspaper. So it says the Bedford Falls Sentinel. President decorates Harry Bailey. Local boy wins Congressional Medal of Honor. President decorates our own Harry. Cities celebrate heroes' homecoming. And this is Commander Harry Bailey, famous Navy Air Ace, born and raised in Bedford Falls, was decorated yesterday with the nation's highest honor. And you can't really read the rest of the thing. But what I found very interesting is on the top, it says this is the county's leading newspaper. So you'd think that in Bedford Falls, they don't really need to have that many competing newspapers. And then we see it says News of the World, volume 30, and the price is 5 cents. How much do you think 5 cents is worth today?
Oh, let's see. 40s, isn't it like about a 20-fold increase? So do my math, that's what, about $1?
So it's 85 cents.
Ah.
85 cents. And did you know something missing from this newspaper?
There's no date.
That is right. There is no date, even though we know the date, but there is absolutely no date on it, which is pretty interesting because you think that that would be the most essential thing that you need to have on a newspaper. You need to know what day these events happened.
And maybe they put it at the bottom of the page.
Maybe. I don't think we ever get to see the bottom. So, yeah. Oh, well.
It also says snow tonight in the top right corner, which comes into play tomorrow.
That's right. Correct. Correct. They predict the weather well. And that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else?
Mean, we do see a picture of Harry Truman with, I imagine,
Harry Bailey.
Harry Bailey. So Harry and Harry.
That's right. When Harry met Harry. And then there's a separate picture of him also that just says National Hero. So what's very funny about the we mentioned about the Bells of St. Mary, right? One of the main actors in the movie is Henry Travers, who actually plays Clarence here. So it's pretty funny that he's in both. And the movie the Bells of St. Mary also features in The Godfather, because Michael and Kay go see that movie in Radio City Musical. Every Tuesday, we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Uplifting Experience Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that has happened to them over the course of their life that they feel is an uplifting experience or an inspirational experience. So do you have a story for us, Bella?
I think I will go fairly recent, and just this past October, I actually took a trip from Georgia up to Indianapolis, where we had the Movies by Minutes convention, something that they've held several times over the past few years in different locales across the country. I know I was kind of disappointed because I binged it to a lot of older episodes, and I know that they had one in Chicago, but it was like right before I really got into the Movies by Minutes community, because I would have definitely gone to the one in Chicago because that would have been local for me. But I wasn't quite in the community at that point in time. But I did take a trip up to Indianapolis just for the purposes of meeting fellow podcasters in this niche community. And we basically spent the entire day together. It started out with like kind of this small convention. There was about, I think, 30 or 40 of us there that managed to make it out there, as well as I think three or four local to Indy that showed up. And just had a few live episodes, some trivia, and then we went out to local food places and to a local bar, and just it was basically like a good 12 hours or so just hanging out with fellow podcasters, meeting new people. And that was just an incredible experience for me, and something that I have done that like really only once before, early on with the LAM community. They did do a meetup in Chicago that I was able to go to, and that was also fun. But this was more recent, and I really enjoyed being able to go to that and spend time and socialize with all these people. And they were, everybody was incredibly friendly, and it was just a very nice, uplifting get together.
Oh wow, yeah, it's a very friendly community. For anyone who is not familiar with it, we all have a lot of online friends that way, being able to go and, meet up on with people in person, it's something I would love to do one day, but, I couldn't make it this year in October, and looking at what happened on that day, it's probably a good thing I wasn't there. Yeah. Maybe next time. We'll have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for that explanation and that story. Thank you very much, Bubba. So you want to tell once again where they can find you?
Sure. I have a lot of projects going on, and one of my other projects is right now it's more pretty should be finishing up, coming close to the end of what I'm kind of calling a hiatus season. Over the summer, I went through Memento scene by scene, and so I followed it up with what I like to call its sister movie, 50 First Dates, because it does and deal with the same memory condition, although in a very different way. And I'm going through that movie one date at a time for 21 episodes, releasing that every Tuesday. And then I've, after that concludes, which should be around this time, I haven't decided what I'm going to be doing next season. It will probably be some sort of TV show, I'm flirting with the idea of maybe doing a video game or even a book that involves time loops in some way, shape, or form. I might be doing the 7.5 deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, which is a novel that is time loop related. And in previous seasons, I've kind of covered other time loop related movies and TV episodes like Groundhog Day, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The Twilight Zone, Triangle. I'm just kind of going through them one loop at a time whenever I'm dealing with specifically time loops. But I also occasionally hit other TV episodes whenever there's only a single episode that involves a time loop and other, time loop related things there. And that's a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Okay. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe. On any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show, finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com, and you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.